feel stronger. Like I've made it this far and have endured maybe not the most ideal life and conditions. My relationship is garbage and has been for a really long time. He's not a bad person. We're just so mismatched. It's ridiculous. My kid has autism. You know, my mom died when I was really young. There's a lot of things that could create a victim, and I don't want to be a victim.
This is the Interdisciplinary Life Podcast, Episode 3. Today we're talking about raising kids with special needs, being friends with your ex on social media, and wading into the dating pool for the first time at the age of 41. My guest is Sophia Coleman, and I am your host, Roberto Santiago. So here we are. Welcome to Episode 3 of the Interdisciplinary Life Podcast. Today is going to be a little bit of a throwback in a couple of ways. First of all, while I've been writing and working a lot, talking a lot about parenting and school and education, and we are going to cover those topics today, we're also going to throw back to when I used to write more about relationships. When I was single and dating and getting divorced, writing about relationships felt a lot more natural. And then when I suddenly found myself back in a long-term relationship and married, I've written a little bit less about it because I try as much as possible not to tell other people's stories. So, you know, those who followed the blog for a long time have seen that it was a lot about relationships, and then it became more about raising kids. But today, I'm really happy to have our guest for this week, Sophia Coleman, who, as we throw it back to the days of relationships, so Sophia and I have been friends for, I don't know, it's been like, I think this was 1994, 95, somewhere in there. It's been a very long time. But Sophia also has the wonderful distinction of having been my senior prom date and my high school sweetheart. And we've maintained a friendship long beyond where the relationship ended, which has actually been super cool. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about raising kids, of course, because that's always what we talk about. And we're going to talk about dating and apps and relationships at 40 as compared to 20. So with that, I will throw it to Sophia and just ask you to say hello. And if you'd want to say something about yourself so people know who you are, that would be awesome.
Well, I'm Sophia. I'm Berto's ex from a long time ago. Definitely. I have two kids. I'm in the process of getting out of a 20-year-long relationship. So I feel like I'm starting over in a lot of ways. So this should be fun to delve into.
I think so.
And safe. I love you.
Oh, I love you too. And I think that this is going to be a really good topic for people, because I think there's a lot of us as a community and as a generation who are starting to get back out into that world at late 30s, early 40s, maybe even 50s, and knowing that, you know, we're not going to become hermits all of a sudden. And so being able to talk to someone who is as willing to talk about it as you are, I think can be helpful for a lot of people who are also going through that, because I think that it's not a unique situation.
Not at all, and it's strength in numbers. I think it's important to just put it out there, because it's nothing to be ashamed of. And maybe my ridiculous situation could make somebody else feel more comfortable about theirs.
That's part of what, like, the whole, like, people go to like group therapy because they want to know that there's other people out there who are going through similar experiences.
Absolutely. We're not alone. I mean, not everybody can be as lucky as you.
Yeah. And yet, you know, I also have already gone through one divorce. So it's not like,
that's a good point.
Yeah. So it's not like I like just got this all right and I'm some sort of like savant at this, or I've got more skills than other people. It's just that I got my disastrous marriage out of the way in the first one. And now I'm trying to build up and do better in the second one.
Good call. Good call.
You know?
Don't waste 20 years of your life. That's probably my one biggest word of advice. Get out when you know it's dead. Don't wait.
Maybe, although, you know, there's something to be said for the people who do find a way through, right? You don't want to bail at the first hint of trouble. But
of course not.
You maybe don't want to go an entire decade.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's solid.
We'll definitely get into that. You, like you said, you have two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And your parents.
12 and 8.
12 and 8. And so you've got one who is like deep in the heart of middle school now.
Yes.
And one who's now in third grade. So can you tell us a little bit about your boys and what's been going on with you recently in terms of being a mom? Because it's COVID, right? We know everything's different. The world has changed from what it was a year ago. We got a little taste of it in the spring, but we've now gone through a summer in anticipation, and here we are at the beginning. How's that been?
It's been rough. I mean, I have a 12-year-old that is hormonal, wanting to be social, normal, pain in the butt, middle school kid. And he just wants to be out running wild with his friends like we did. And he doesn't have that luxury, unfortunately. So we butt heads a lot. And then I have an 8-year-old that has moderate to severe autism. And distance learning is a joke. He's essentially been out of school since March of last year. He's just sort of spiraling without the support that he was getting beforehand. And unfortunately, there's just not a lot of money within the public school system to support special needs kids more than these really overworked teachers can already do to support their kids. So we're doing our best. He's doing his best, but it's certainly not ideal. He's hard. He lit a fire in my house the other day. So
I saw the picture of the grocery bag with, I mean, it looked, I mean, honestly, like it looked like hot garbage. Like it looked like a dumpster fire.
It's very artsy.
It was very artsy. Like if you could have put like, you know, like coating over it and preserved it, you could.
Ooh, and resin?
Exactly. A resin.
Yes.
Like myrrh, a gum resin, right?
Make it amber?
Maybe, yeah, you could have ambered it. That would have been very artsy. So what kind of supports are they trying to give him right now?
He has one-on-one Zoom meetings with his brand new teacher. Part of why this has been such a struggle for us is the program he's in the public school system that we've been fortunate enough to get for him was kindergarten through second grade with one teacher. So he really had an opportunity to bond with her and make progress with her. But now that he's in third grade, he has to move on to a whole new classroom setting from third to fifth. And he doesn't know the teacher or the kids. And he's just screaming his head off anytime we try to get him on this one-on-one Zoom meeting with her. So he's essentially had no schooling or support thus far. And yeah, there's no additional services available because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of behavioral therapists are going out to work right now. The regional center, which is where we go for any type of disabled child within your county, each one has a regional center that you can go to for resources. And it's just pretty much shut down currently because of COVID. So there's not a lot out there. Especially if you don't have money.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that familiarity and that connection is really important for a kid who has that moderate to severe autism to like really build that trust and relationship with someone like a teacher over time. So this must be really tough with that transition right now, right?
It's extremely hard. I mean, most people that are on the spectrum struggle with social interaction. So having to be with somebody new is already a trigger for the most part. And doing it online and not having a physical interaction is just unbelievably difficult for my son specifically. I think some children on the spectrum are doing well in this setting, but mine certainly isn't. He needs to be there, have a very set routine, and be able to hug his teacher. He's very affectionate, and I just don't think he wants to do it this way. He's rebelling against it.
I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't think most kids want to do it this way. And so for someone who thrives a lot better with that personal connection, I can imagine that this is just basically a non-starter, like you're saying.
It's going to be a while before he participates, if at all, to be honest. And I just have the Zoom classroom on in the background, and he's usually in his room, and I know he can hear it, but I try to make it his choice to participate rather than forcing it on him and making it a negative immediately. And I know that he's curious. He sort of pokes his head out of the door and will come snoop and look and then run away. And so I feel like we'll get there eventually, but he's certainly not getting any type of education or foundation right now. But it's very different with special needs children anyhow. They don't follow a traditional curriculum that, you know, your neurologically typical children or normal kids follow.
And something that we talked about a little bit yesterday was Adama getting older and larger. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of what that has been like and what you're anticipating going over for the next several years?
He's 8, but he already weighs about 80 pounds and he's a solid kid, and he's going to be tall. And I'm not the largest gal. He's almost as powerful as I am now, and trying to restrain him when he's having a very aggressive meltdown has been my biggest challenge sort of to face now. And thinking about being a single mom and living on my own and having to take care of 2 children, ideally half time, it scares me a lot to have this very strong, unpredictable child that could very easily just beat me to a bloody pulp, honestly, already at this point. And it's only going to get harder as he gets older and stronger and hormones come into play and he doesn't understand these feelings or how to communicate them. I mean, it makes sense to me why he reacts the way he does, but it doesn't lessen my fears for now or for the future. I mean, I try to take it day by day with him and not project. I don't fantasize about his future the way I do about my neurologically typical son. But I definitely am deeply afraid of losing him, of him being taken away, because it's already getting close to the point where I can barely control him.
And this is something that I haven't explored a lot, but are there in-home services, or is there anything that you can get from the county or the state or to help to avoid that kind of separation?
There are behavioral therapists that will come in, but they don't actually live in your home. There's nothing that's really supplied by the county or government that is that helpful. I get maybe 10 hours a month, if I'm lucky, of respite from the regional center. And to be honest, I've never been able to collect that. There's always something going on that prevents them from being able to make it happen. I am in a position, because his father has financial security, that maybe in the future we would try to hire a private behavioral therapist, but they run a minimum of $100 an hour. Mm-hmm. And if I was to have someone like that live in the home, it would be really hard and very costly. And they don't really help as much as you would think. It's sort of just a go-between. You're still there 100% of the time. It's not really a break in any sort of sense. Dang it.
Ah, Yeah, right? and those breaks, I mean, I think obviously that's something that almost all parents are looking for, but I think a parent in your situation, just being able to have an hour here or there has got to be just so important.
An hour? Gosh, that's a luxury. At least he sleeps through the night. He's a great sleeper. So once he's down, mommy gets to be free. So I do have that, which most of us with kids on the spectrum do not have. So I do understand sort of how good we have it too. And I don't want to always think, oh, this is horrible. This sucks. This is really hard, because it's not. Mm-hmm. It's just my life. And it's different than maybe someone else's, but he's a cool little guy, even though he starts fires in my house and steals my neighbor's light bulbs. And when we have Christmas trees, he eats the Christmas tree light bulbs. That's called pica, by the way. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's the thing. When they eat the weird stuff they're not supposed to eat. Luckily, it's not everything. He's fixated on light bulbs only. But when you see your child with a mouthful of blood and there's 10 missing little tiny Christmas tree light bulbs from your tree, you realize, oh, I guess we won't put lights on the tree next year.
No, I guess not. You go back to candles like they did in the 1800s. I'm sure that'll be totally safe.
Right. Since he's already started a fire, probably no with the candles.
Okay, no with the candles. So then if we look back to Constantine, you've got another set of sort of interesting parenting challenges going on. There's one in particular, I really loved sort of your story about it and how you guys handled it. Can you tell us a little bit about the iPad?
Of course. Because everything is socially distanced right now, and we have one iPad that we share between our family, it's primarily my older son's. But now, because we're doing this whole Zoom thing, I wanted something larger to work with. And I went and grabbed his iPad, and there was window after window of porn, and it didn't end. And it was so much, and he's 12, and it just happened. And I couldn't help but laugh my ass off, excuse me for saying that, but it's so normal. It really is. But this stupid kid didn't know how to close any windows or erase any browser history. I mean, it's just evidence everywhere. At least 25 windows open, just one after the other. And he was even in a chat room,
which
that's what really scared me more than anything else.
Yes, that is way scarier than looking at pictures,
looking at
videos, or like the chat room. That's frightening.
He's a 12-year-old, very pretty boy that is so naive and is the perfect target for some horrible person to just take advantage of, especially in our home where he is so neglected because of the attention I put on my younger son. What we really focused on when we talked to him, his father and myself, about the porn discovery was we didn't want to shame him. Mm-hmm. So we definitely touched on all of that and tried to stress to, you know, close these things. You know, you don't leave them open. You know, find your favorite thing and maybe bookmark it or something. I don't know. Weird conversations, you know. It was the chat room, really trying to explain to him just how vulnerable he is and understanding how lonely he probably is because of how much attention we focus on his little brother. Mm-hmm. I didn't want him to go there for what he's missing from us. So we really tried to speak with him about that and be sensitive about that. And also say, I'll murder you if you go back into a chat room. Mm-hmm. Like, you can look at the porn, that's fine. I'm not necessarily condoning it, but I'm not going to sit here and act like you're not going to do it.
Right.
You know, and I'd rather you do it at home where it's safe than be out trying to sneak around in the park looking at your iPad full of porn. trying to be reasonable about it, you know. This is your future, buddy.
I mean, that's like, when I was a kid, it was like if someone found a Playboy in the bushes, right? So we were like at the park anyway.
I know.
That was like, that was the extent of it. So the idea of just like trying to get on the free public Wi-Fi on your iPad at the park is like a whole thing I'm not even conceptually ready to deal with.
It, nor was I, but I certainly was presented with it and had to handle real fast, but also understood why he was so vulnerable to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just went to middle school. He had never, and this, I think he's been doing it for a little while, and we discovered it just before he started seventh grade. So over the summer break, but he met all the cooler, more hyphy kids at Edna Brewer instead of the bubble wealthy kids at Montclair. And boy, they really told him some things.
Not that
showed him some stuff.
Not that the wealthy kids aren't doing this either, right? I mean, that was always...
I'm sure they are, but they're smarter probably about their browser history.
I guess then for me, that brings up the question, you know, as a man, and as a man who was a 12-year-old boy, right? If part of your conversation with your son revolved around the difference between sort of the fantasy land of porn and your actual interactions with like your peers, your female peers, even the ones like not just even like day to day, obviously, but I mean, he's obviously having these feelings. He's going to start feeling romantic things towards girls in class and stuff like that. And I think it's really important now more than ever that when that time comes, part of the talk isn't just about sex and it's not just about emotions, but it's about being able to mentally separate the fantasy world of porn and what that looks like and what that's like there, and then how you actually interact with potential partners, with people you want to date or smooch yes. behind the bleachers or whatever it is, right?
I definitely talked... I wanted him to understand what was realistic and what wasn't. I was pretty blatant with my son, to be honest. I just felt like, why not? If I can do this and put it out there, maybe he'll speak to me about it in the future and not be afraid that mom is going to freak out about something.
Right. And I think that's what you want, right? Like that's ultimately whatever your approach is and whatever your strategy is in these conversations. I think one of the best outcomes you can have is that your kids are willing to come to you and talk to you through each stage of their sexual development, their awakening to all of this, because right, we can't hide it and we can't make it taboo to the point where they hide it, because they're still going to do it, right?
Absolutely.
And so what you want is to be able to have those healthy conversations and to be able to talk about these things on an ongoing basis.
Yes. And I'm not ready to be a grandma. So I really do want to talk about these things. Like, don't be an idiot. Don't expect to bring somebody home. We're not doing that here. No.
No.
I can't believe I'm dealing with this already. It's horrifying, to be honest with you. I look at him and he looks like a baby to me, but he's definitely not. Little voice is cracking.
Oh, and you're so just cute. You're just a year ahead of me, and of course this stuff can pop up at almost any age, but
anytime
when I talk to parents who've gone through
this, ready.
I'm always like trying to pull out the best practices and think about like, well, what am I going to do when this inevitably sort of happens, right?
I think you'll be fine. You're a pretty chill guy. And I think your wife is also really chill, and you'll do whatever you need to do for your individual children.
Absolutely. And I
whatever works for you.
That's the other thing about parenting in general. And, you know, it's been the theme on the blog and it's my theme all the time is I don't really give parenting advice. I talk about my mistakes and how I tried to clean them up, and maybe people learn from that, but parenting, while there's definitely sort of these broad categories and things we can talk about like outcomes we're seeking.
Yeah.
kids are individuals and families are individuals. And so it's really hard to say, well, here's what you should do, because those are your kids and you're you. And it's, no one can really tell you definitively what you need to do for your kid.
Just don't raise an asshole. I mean, shouldn't that be the main objective?
It's definitely one of the overarching goals.
That is my goal. And I have two boys that look white, that are privileged, and I really hit home with them, especially my older one, Constantine. He has all the privilege in the world. He's so smart. He just looks like this rich white boy. And I want him to understand what comes with that, mm-hmm. and to not be a monster with it. So I hope I can do my part.
I think you can, absolutely, because, you know, you didn't grow up privileged. You know, I would say it was quite the opposite, in fact. And I think that you're always going to be able to instill that in your kids. You know, I my kids also look white for the most part, right? Ryu definitely looks white. And, you know, a story I've told a couple of times, but one day a few years ago, and he was saying, we were talking about something, he goes, you know, Dad, my friends who are people of color, and he started going on, and I had to sort of pause and walk it back and say, like, you mean your friends who are also people of color?
Yeah.
Because as much as you understand that you look different and you're going to get treated different in your life, I want you to still remember you are Puerto Rican, right? Like, and you're not going to suffer through some of the things that maybe I did, or that some of our people in our family who have even darker complexions, or people in the world. But inside, I need you to know that you are Santiago. Like, you are Puerto Rican, and you have to remember that.
Absolutely. Well, and my son is Garza, so it's... You know, he has the same thing, but he certainly does not look like it at all. But that's okay. I mean, one of his best friends is first generation from Mexico. And then one of his other best friends is Muslim, and his parents are from Africa. And they're just like, oh, you're white. You're white. And they say it to him, and he comes home and he's so frustrated. Mom, I'm Mexican too, or I'm Puerto Rican too. And it's like, I know, babe. They're just looking at you and making a snap judgment. But, you know, you can talk to them about it and explain what you are and be proud of who you are. And that's really all that matters. You don't have to go out and wave a flag, you know, this is what I am and you better believe me or else. It doesn't matter. We're Bay people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's move to sort of the next topic, which is the relationships topic, right?
Oh, God. And yeah, the real shit.
Ooh. The real, I mean, parenting's real. Parenting is for sure real.
It is.
But the relationship part, I think, is very fresh for you right now and probably feels a lot more real. You and I have an ancient history.
We all.
And then we maintained a friendship afterwards for all of these years, really. Most people are not friends with their exes, and you're not just
so friends. Weird to me.
You're not just friends with me, you're friends with all of your exes. So first of all, the friends with exes piece, and then I do want to talk about the social media piece, because I think that is a big part of our lives right now. Let's start with the friends with your exes. What's that about? What's your deal, man?
You're all so good. I still want to have you in my life. You're nice people. I'm rooting for you all. When I hear about you getting married or having children, I'm like, yeah, this is great. I just, when you care about somebody, that can continue on. And I've never had a really destructive breakup or really nasty fights. I've never been in anything abusive. I've never been cheated on. You're all really good people. You're a very good person.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, your wife is so lucky. If you give so much of yourself to someone or show so much of yourself to someone, why wouldn't you want to keep doing so? I don't know. You know so much about me. I feel like if you're intimate with somebody or spend that amount of time with somebody, I'm also that girl that was in longer relationships. I didn't just go hang out for a couple of weeks and move on. It was, I lived with people and was, as a young person, having almost married type relationships. It's, you guys know a lot about me and were therapy for me in those times when I needed it. So why, I don't know, I just don't understand why you wouldn't want to maintain friendship. Time is helpful, you know, after a breakup. You probably don't want to be in their face right away or bothering them. But, and we all live in the Bay Area. None of us really leave too. So you're going to see them again.
So social media, my sort of anxiety over social media is not from what you're going to think. And it's not from what Tanisa is going to think, but I really don't want like the associated world looking at my likes and comments and making assumptions about my relationship with you.
I used to be a lot more concerned with that, honestly, and just following certain codes, so to speak, where you just don't do that. It's inappropriate. You're not supposed to. You are very reserved in that sense. I respect that about you. But I just hit a point where I don't care anymore. And if I say something, it's always genuine and nice. And I'm not trying to like slide into somebody's DMs that, you know what I mean? It's, I don't know. If you're making a public comment, it don't be so concerned. And I'll beat them up if they judge you anyway. Screw those people.
Well, and then it gets, so then there's two things, right? The nature of our social media is very different right now.
Right. Oh man.
But like, I don't post a lot of pictures of me like trying on outfits. Right. Like I'm not like
deep faking it. Out.
I'm just saying like, and look, they're all lovely and wholesome pictures, right? I'm not judging your pictures. You know that.
Pictures and stuff, man.
But I'm just saying, like, I'm not like beefcaking out on my Instagram stories, right? And I feel like the likes and comments there are a lot more
aggressive,
iffy, and towards in terms of like public scrutiny, right?
It is, and you're smart to not say anything, honestly.
Like I like your food pictures. I like your posts about your kids. I comment on those. And then there's sort of a set of your social media presence that I see, but don't really engage with, if that makes sense.
I think that's smart. Well, I only have 13 exes. So there's not a lot of people that are coming in and potentially gonna make comments out of, you know, I have, what, 200 friends on Facebook? So it's not that much of a thirst fest for me, I guess, in regards to exes. But some of them do make some comments, and ones that are married, and they make them publicly. So maybe that's their relationship though. And that's how they roll, or just that's the way they behave and it's okay with them and they don't care what others think. But I don't comment on anybody's like beefcake pictures either. Unless it's maybe the one other ex that I've been kind of hanging out with recently, but that's a whole nother thing. it's really surprising what posting a few bikini pictures will bring, to be honest. Only recently have I been posting pictures of myself kind of like that. Mm-hmm. It was always a picture with me and my kids or nothing that was trying to engage more of a adult socialization, I guess I could say.
Okay.
Right. But then all of a sudden, I guess it was probably December, January, it transitioned for me and it just opened my eyes to what social media really has gone to, especially Instagram. Far more so than Facebook. Facebook's still pretty wholesome and it's timid. Like I'm not getting any eggplant pictures in my direct messages on Facebook. But Instagram is full of that. I don't know why men think that's appropriate. Public service announcement. Don't do that, men. You don't want it. or at least I don't at all. It's really unnecessary. Send a picture of your face.
Is it eggplant emojis, or are they sending you actual, like, the
eggplant? Oh, no, it's, like, real deal pictures. Yeah. Yeah, dude.
I shouldn't be laughing. I know that could be traumatic.
It's funny. It makes you want to copy them and post that shit and just put them on blast. But when you tell them no more and they stop, then, you know, you don't have to put them on blast. But it's hard to be a female.
Absolutely. You'll get no argument from me on that one.
It is what you make it, though. I mean, I put myself out there in a certain way that brought it to me. I'm not posting naked pictures and things like that. I'm a mom, for God's sake, people. But, I mean, you know what you're getting yourself into when you post like 10 bikini pictures in a row, right? You probably should expect somebody's gonna say something. So I knew what I was getting myself into. I just didn't realize that people were so bold now.
Right.
Like, really bold about their stuff. And married, not married, in relationships, people that I barely know, people that I've known as long as you. It's crazy.
People you used to babysit?
I also think I'm somewhat, my good friend's children. Hella creepy, honestly. Really creepy.
Yeah, that's the thing, is then what do you say at Easter, right? When you have to see that person again.
I don't know if I could ever be in that person's presence again, to be honest. And their mom sure as hell doesn't know. I had to say, you know that I'm older than your mom, right? Oh. But it is my fault. And I do accept responsibility for, you put out a certain thing, you have to expect you're going to get something back. You know, and I think that's a perfect segue into, I put myself out on Tinder on a dare just to see what it was about. Also out of curiosity, because everybody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I want to see. And you can't actually go snoop on it unless you create an account. So they kind of trap your ass into it. But it's an explosion, and it's literally like shopping. You're just like, nope, 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 nope. So weird, Bruno.
So that is That is a great segue. So the next part of this, so, you know, you're a mom, you're doing the mom thing, you're doing the co-parent thing, you're anticipating potentially doing the single mom thing or the co-parent part-time, like, you've got all that going on.
Ideally 50-50. We'll see what happens.
Ideally, absolutely. You've got sort of the, you know, this change now in your relationship. Right? And you're putting yourself back out there, and you got the profile. And like I told you yesterday and the day before, like, that just, like, I can't imagine it. Like, me and T often just, like, are look at each other relieved that we're not trying to date in this world, in apps and Instagram, and the whole thing just seems so weird and overwhelming and scary.
It's horrifying. Yeah.
You know,
it's dangerous too.
How so?
I don't know. You don't really know these people. That's the sort of thing that scares me. That's why Facebook or Instagram are easier, because you can just sort of go through people that you do know somewhat. And hopefully they're not an axe murderer. You know, it's American Psycho isn't going to just show up at your door trying to take you out somewhere. Ugh. I don't think I would ever actually do anything with somebody from Tinder, because it's just so foreign and weird, to be honest. Like, who are you people, really?
So who,
but it's fun.
So, okay. So you're not planning on maybe actually, like, dating someone from Tinder. So have you matched with people, or, like, who's, like,
hitting
you up on Tinder?
So many people. I mean, you basically, they ask you what your age is. I'm 41, and I'm not lying about my age. And they give you a bracket, and I think it's from 31 to 55. It's just all these random, like, it's bananas. So it's like, oh, you have 500 plus people that have liked you. And you're literally just scrolling through all these different people. It's a woman's game for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
All that online thing. It's, if you look a certain way, if you look outdoorsy, oh Jesus, everybody wants somebody that's fit and outdoorsy, even if you're not really, right?
So you're out there and you're dating again. What is it like? What's the difference being out there dating now compared to what it was like the last time you were out dating? Like, can you tell us a little bit about sort of, I don't know what it was, the late 90s compared to now, and sort of a little bit about what happened in between to give context?
I've never dated. Let's just put that out there. I've been asked out twice by men that I didn't previously know, like in some sort of way that was very highly safe. One was in Oregon and I was with him for 2 years, but we didn't date. He just came up and said he liked me, and then we were boyfriend and girlfriend. We were so young. I think I was 19. And then my kid's father asked me out 2 days after my 21st birthday, and we did go to dinner a few times. But so 21 to 41, no dating. And it's so different. I didn't even have a cell phone back then. So nobody was sending pictures of inappropriate things or just sliding into my DM saying, you know, I specialize in foot rubs, sandwich making, and oral sex. Like, these fools are blatant about their stuff. It's crazy. You actually had to work for it a little bit back when I was younger. You don't do anything now. You could just pick from random people trying to like offer you services. It's crazy now. I'm terrified.
How are you different than you were 20 years ago? Other than
smarter. I'm smarter a lot. I'm a lot more confident. I feel stronger. Like, I've made it this far and have endured maybe not the most ideal life and conditions. I mean, my relationship is garbage and has been for a really long time. He's not a bad person. We're just so mismatched. It's ridiculous. My kid has autism. You know, my mom died when I was really young. There's a lot of things that could create a victim, and I don't want to be a victim. And I realized that. I quit smoking, and I'm so much better now than when I was 21. I don't hate myself anymore. I'm not projecting something that's a complete and utter lie. You know, it was funny when we spoke yesterday and you mentioned how confident you thought that I was back then. And I wasn't. I was so afraid of everything and insecure, and all of you were so smart. And I just dreaded you trying to talk about something that had to do with academia. Literally. I still do, to be honest. But back then, it was just terrifying to me that I would lose you all because you would realize what I really was, you know. But now I don't really care if you don't like me because I am an eighth grade dropout. Take me as I am. And I'm still a good person. I feel like I understand my worth now. That's the biggest change for me. I'm worth something. And I believe it.
Because, you know, I remember seeing you in the hallway at school, you know, probably 6 months or so before we actually ever met. When I saw you around school, I thought you were super cute, but I was never going to talk to you because you were clearly too cool, right? And it's the flip side.
Men are so dumb.
And so, right.
That's
so
classic.
Before I knew you, and I would see you walk around school with the radio and just the whole thing, I was like, that girl is way too, like, if I tried to talk to her, I would get shut down very fast because I am not cool.
Dumb. See, that's another public service announcement. go talk to the girl. She's probably so bored and lonely. Just do it. Ah. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to teach my son. I don't want to get off topic, but like, don't be afraid. Talk to the girl or boy or whatever it is that you're into.
Just talk to people.
Let me clarify.
Just talk to people.
Yes, don't be afraid.
And well, and the other thing is talk to people and just be genuine. When I had the courage to talk to girls, it's because I had the courage to be myself. Have to be.
You never struggled. You always had some like pretty girl on your arm though.
That's true.
Yeah, That's true. You did.
Yeah, I have not spent a lot of time alone, but I'm still glad I'm not doing it at 40.
Now is an interesting time to be doing that, yeah. But I'm the same way. I never really spent any time alone. It's just from one to the next. Like, and I'm going to be with you for 2 years, and then I'll just go be with the next person for 2 years. And now it's been 20.
But so how is that different now? Because I think that that's, do you think that's going to be the next thing that happens?
Because I hope not. I don't want to rush back into something. I don't. I want to be alone and kind of discover myself. I've never lived alone, ever. I've never had my own place, which is insane to me. I think that would be amazing. I mean, I won't ever completely because I have 2 children, but just being the boss of my own environment would be so nice. I'm looking forward to that. But I also know myself, and I don't like being alone all the time. I love that type of personal connection. And you can get it through friendships, but there is something to be said about having a physical connection with someone as well. And I've definitely been enjoying the person that I've been hanging out with a lot. And it's so natural and comfortable. And that's what happens when you get back with somebody that you were with when you were 13. It's kind of ridiculous, honestly. But I feel like it would be a mistake to just rush right back into that. I don't want it. Or maybe I do. I don't know what I want. I really don't. I have no idea. I'm going to just let it happen.
Is that how it always was for you, or is that new?
No, I think I went for each one of you specifically, honestly. You all were targets. You weren't going to hurt me. You weren't going to reject me or cheat on me. You were all hella nice and offered a certain level of stability. You know, I mean, I moved in with you almost immediately. Same thing with Miguel. I mean, I lived at Gabe's house. All these people, that was always something that I was kind of looking for because my life was so unstable. But all of, you know, these wonderful boys, I should say, because you all were boys, gave me that and were so nice to me. That's why you're all still my friends. You know? But I don't want just that anymore. Not that that's just what I had, but I want to go for something else rather than like, oh, I like this person because, you know, X, Y, Z, they're not going to hurt me and they can, you know, give me a place to stay or whatever it is. I'm not looking for that.
Right.
I'm really looking forward to having a certain level of stability on my own and not needing that from anybody else. It's like anybody that I date or give myself to, it's because I choose to for the right reasons, or at least it finally feels that way to me. It's because I really want it, not because I need something from you. You know, words of affirmation are very important. Like being acknowledged, I think, is extremely important. You know, a friend of mine was asking me what my love language was, like if it's physical touch or words of acknowledgement, whatever it is. I was like, you know, physical touch is great, but I want to be acknowledged. I want somebody to tell me when I'm doing a good job. That I think falls in line with worth, being worth something or feeling like you're worthy of something. Especially when you're a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad and you're just like doing dishes and laundry and bullshit all day that nobody wants to do and nobody ever thanks you for. It's like, well, you have clean underwear because of me. You realize that, right? And they were dirty and I picked them up. You better say thank you.
Yeah, I remember when I was a stay-at-home dad, definitely part of the love language was a couple hours off.
Yes! Oh. Man. No kidding. He's retired now, my kid's father.
Couple hours out of the house, a couple, you know, like that was huge for me back then. And it's part of the acknowledgement, right? Well, I will definitely acknowledge you and say that, you know, as I've watched you raise your kids and go through everything that you've gone through in your relationship, you know, those the ebbs and flows as we've talked about over the years, I think you're doing a great job. I really do. And, you know, you have...
Thank you. We do our best, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do our best and we try to make the best decisions that we can for ourselves. And then once we have families, for our families. And I think that, you know, you've done so much, not just for yourself, but for the people around you. And I think that that's really important.
I love my people, honestly. My family is really not a big part of my life. I wish I had more family and support. You know, being from the Bay Area and having such a big family and yet having no contact with them, my friends are my family. You create your own family. And it's so much less toxic when you can actually pick and choose your family than allow those people in that just hurt you over and over again because they feel like they can. Mm-hmm. That's part of getting older too, I think, and understanding your worth.
Oh, absolutely. And to clarify, you don't mean like, when you say your family's not a big part of life, you don't mean the people in your house. You mean the, what do you call it?
By a lot, from my loins family. No, they're great. I love those little rats. Right. But my brother, my dad, my mother was one of 9 children and I don't speak to any of them. I mean, even my cousin.
But, yeah.
I know you understand that, the lack of family support.
Absolutely understand it. That's why we came back here and why we fight so hard to stay here, even though it's not easy to stay in this area. You know, our lives
it's
would be
so hard.
A lot easier, but a lot less fulfilling if we stayed in Maryland or if we went to any of the other number of places where I might have more fulfilling job opportunities. But we came back here for the community and we came back here, you know, for that chosen family. And that's part of why the pandemic is so hard is because the community we came back for is unavailable by and large.
Yeah.
And that makes it really tough.
Well, just, it does. And I of course stalk you on social media and look at all the beautiful pictures of your children and your family, and they just look so happy here. Like they really just belong. Your children fit here. And I don't know if I can see a more Berkeley family than your little kids. They really belong.
They do.
We're going to make it happen. I'll figure something out.
We'll get it done, man.
I promise.
All right. Well, with that, I think that's a great place to close. I want to thank you so much for being so open and sharing so much about your life. I think that it's going to resonate with a lot of people.
I hope so. I don't mean to be scary. It's just my life. It is what it is. I know it's not the prettiest, but it's also not the ugliest or messiest by far.
Absolutely not.
It's an adventure.
The Interdisciplinary Life podcast was written and directed by Roberto Santiago. Our theme song is David Koresh by Abundant Society, all produced in association with NTDL Productions.
Recording.